Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for February 24th, 2025. I'm Phil Adler. In an increasingly confrontational world, you can add sanctions to what seems like an expanding field of investment risks. Confluence Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon Hernandez joins us today to help investors identify and respond to sanctions risk. Patrick, everybody is focused today on how tariffs might impact investment strategy. Have we forgotten about sanctions?
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me on the program. And to answer your question, yes, everyone has been focused on President Trump's tariff policies ever since the election, but people seem to have forgotten all the sanctions that the U.S. has put in place in recent years. Those sanctions remain in place, and more have been added in just the last few weeks. More important, even if Trump imposes lots of new tariffs, his administration also could potentially add a lot more sanctions, either against whole countries, against particular companies, and even against individuals overseas. So it's important to keep this in mind.
How might ignoring the risk of sanctions impact our investments?
Well, that's exactly why we wrote this article. For U.S. investors, it's important to remember that the U.S. has imposed a wide variety of sanctions, and they often come out of the blue. They can prevent a U.S. individual, investment fund, or company from all kinds of transactions with other countries or other entities and individuals associated with a foreign country. They can even punish those foreign entities or individuals for doing things outside the U.S. that are inimical to U.S. national security or foreign policy. A key problem is that U.S. investors could wake up some morning and find that they can't sell a particular investment, or that a company they've invested in has lost a major market. Sanctions mean the possibility of a sudden freeze on one's assets. So that's why investors need to pay attention to the risk of sanctions.
Well, when we think of sanctions, what might come to mind first for many people are the sanctions against Russia instituted by the U.S. because of the Ukraine war. How have they worked?
Well, there actually have been many, many different sanctions imposed on Russia, both by the U.S., by the Europeans, and sometimes by both together. Many of the sanctions have banned transactions with Russian individuals, companies, government entities, or even whole industries such as energy. Overall, their success has been hit or miss. Some sanctions, such as freezing Russia's foreign currency reserves held in the West, have been extremely successful. For example, we think that's a key reason for today's central banks that are buying so much gold and driving gold prices up to record levels. On the other hand, Russia and other actors have found loopholes or other ways to get around a lot of the other sanctions, especially in oil shipping. But even though some sanctions have been successful and others not, law-abiding investors and investment managers have certainly been impacted.
Patrick, you point out that there are many kinds of sanctions. Tell us some of the key differences that we should remember.
Well, one distinction that we emphasize is the difference between comprehensive sanctions and targeted sanctions. A comprehensive sanction is applied to an entire foreign country. For example, the U.S. maintains comprehensive sanctions barring U.S. persons from virtually all transactions with the country's citizens or residents of Iran, Cuba, North Korea, and Russian-controlled parts of Crimea. The U.S. also maintains targeted sanctions that bar U.S. persons from transactions with specific foreign entities, individuals, or activities. Targeted sanctions are often referred to as list-based, since the targeted entities or activities only become subject to the sanction when they've been put on a special list. Believe it or not, Phil, there are currently thousands of foreign individuals and entities on U.S. sanctions lists. Now, another key distinction that we make is between primary and secondary sanctions. A primary sanction generally imposes criminal or civil liability on U.S. persons for transacting with sanctioned foreign entities. In contrast, a secondary sanction aims to stop or deter specified transaction between non-U.S. persons, even if those transactions occur outside the U.S. and have no direct connection with the U.S. The penalty for violating a secondary sanction is generally to deny the non-U.S. person from certain privileges related to the U.S., such as access to the U.S. financial system. Now, based on this discussion, I think you can see that there are lots of different kinds of sanctions that could trip up an investor. But also, Phil, I want to emphasize that we aren't lawyers, so our discussion of U.S. sanctions law here is merely a summary and shouldn't be taken as authoritative.
Patrick, could you give us a couple of quick examples of the different kinds of sanctions?
Sure. Again, the best example of a comprehensive sanction is probably the broad ban on transacting with Cuba, to include travel to the island. An example of targeted sanctions would include the entity list of Chinese companies that support Beijing's military. The U.S.'s sanctions against Cuba are primary, since they apply to U.S. citizens. They also apply to entities located in the U.S. and entities organized in the U.S. and even non-U.S. entities owned or controlled by U.S. persons. In an example of a secondary sanction, the U.S. will punish foreign entities that engage in some transactions with North Korea, such as closing off their access to the U.S. financial system.
Well, how does Confluence go about identifying investments that might be prone to sanctions risk?
Well, for us, this is actually a work in process, in that we're trying to improve and rationalize how we identify sanctions risks. We're currently developing an approach that systematically develops a sanctions risk score for various holdings or potential holdings in our portfolios. We've identified several metrics or indicators that we think correlate with a higher level of sanctions risk. The idea will be to keep track of our holdings' sanction risk scores and be especially careful in monitoring developments for those holdings that seem to be at high risk.
Give us an example, Patrick, of how the metric used by Confluence can measure an investment's sanctions risk.
Well, one metric is our block analysis, in which we systematically determine whether a country is in the U.S. geopolitical and economic bloc, the Chinese bloc, or a few intermediate blocs. Now, given that the geopolitical tensions and large number of existing sanctions between the U.S. and Chinese blocs, we would score any company associated with a China bloc country as relatively high risk. If the firm is actually organized, based, or mostly active in a China bloc country, we would score it especially high risk in terms of sanctions. But if it merely sells into a China bloc country or is otherwise only peripherally connected with it, then we would assign it a lower sanctions risk.
Well, an investor might think, well, I can avoid this risk entirely by simply not investing in foreign companies or funds. Is this a reasonable strategy?
No, we think that's going overboard. After all, a huge number of firms around the world would potentially be subject to sanctions. So an investor would probably be losing out on many good opportunities by taking that broad approach. Even if a country or company is at risk of sanctions, the sanctions might never come. We think the better approach is to think systematically about the sanctions risk of any particular company or country and make a judgment call as to whether the opportunity outweighs the risk. It would involve the kind of judgment calls that investors need to make on lots of different dimensions.
I guess the bottom line is that the investor should make sure that the firm that advises or manages his or her assets has a discipline to identify sanctions risk.
That would certainly help. And that's why I think we at Confluence are in a good position to manage sanctions risks. As I mentioned before, our unique, groundbreaking block analysis highlights an especially important source of sanctions risk for investments. And our macro analysis group is especially focused on understanding the geopolitical, military, economic, and technological factors that can lead to international tensions and sanctions.
What's your advice for the individual active investor?
Well, as global geopolitical tensions increase, we think investors should favor managers who have some expertise in geopolitical or other big global risks. And even if someone is investing on their own, we would encourage them to pay close attention to the ebb and flow of geopolitical tensions. Of course, we write about those issues all the time in our daily investment comment, our biweekly geopolitical report, and other publications, all of which are available on our website. We encourage people to follow our analysis there.
Patrick, finally, you mentioned earlier the potential for more sanctions, but do you expect more sanctions as well as tariffs instituted by the U.S. in the days ahead?
Well, Phil, what I suspect is that in the near term, we'll hear more about tariffs than sanctions. However, since sanctions can be an effective tool in international relations, we think new sanctions on a range of other countries and foreign entities or individuals could still come at any time. This is a risk that hasn't gone away, so we think investors should be prepared for it.
Thank you, Patrick. This week's report is titled Sanctions as an Investment Risk, and you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. This written report does include tables that present current global, geopolitical, and economic blocs, as well as countries that are already under comprehensive U.S. sanctions. And you'll also find a simple scoring rubric for sanctions risk. Today's discussion is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.